Well, happy few days after Thanksgiving. Hoping you had a good one. Anybody have a good Thanksgiving? I will not ask for a show of hands if you didn't. I'm going to talk a little bit about my last few days, week and a half or so. Last week was Testimony Sunday. This is too, it's just a little different testimony. And when I'm saying this, you could be sitting there and thinking, wow, he just thinks everything's all about him. It's pretty much true most of the time. And I actually think that's the human condition, that we think things are about us. But and at some level, you should, because you're the only one running you. So it's good to sort of think that way. And yet, when you get stuck there, then that can cause some problems. So that's a little bit about what this week is was about for me, this last week and a half, actually. Last Sunday, when we were at Testimony Sunday, I came up front for a short period of time, and what you may not have noticed is that I had hearing aids in. And you won't notice them today because I forgot them. But why I put that up there was I've been surprised how emotionally traumatic it has been for me to get hearing aids. I think of myself as about 32. I'm 53, and many people have said, you stopped maturing somewhere a long time ago, but that's how I view myself in my physical function is in my 30s. I know I'm not in my 20s anymore. It hurts a little bit when I get out of bed and when I go back into bed and most of the time in between, but I still sort of think of that as the way it was when I was 30. I had a guy tell me, actually, I was at a different church a long time ago, just shortly after we got married, Judy and I, and he said, boy, the day you turn 30, you'll never forget. And he was talking physically. I didn't notice that much. But sometime since then, he's proven to be right. I still think back to being in my 30s, and someone would say, hey, let's go do a pickup football game or something, and I was able to do that. If someone said that now, I'd simply laugh because I'm not there anymore. But getting hearing aids for me somehow, and Blair's here, isn't he, Blair, here? Hi, Blair. Blair has actually been the reason why I haven't just said no, because I love Blair, and I respect Blair, and he's got hearing aids, and I don't think any less of him for having hearing aids. And yet still, I have this emotional struggle because it, in my mind, I think I'm a superhero. And there are no superheroes with hearing aids. So it's been a difficult struggle, so much so that I forget to put them in. And I believe that's probably partly semi-subconscious. And I don't know what semi-subconscious actually is, but it's, I think what that means is I'm choosing to subconsciously forget them. But I will keep putting them in, and you probably won't be able to tell because they're very hard to see, and they do help a lot, but they do make me feel 70. So still wrestling with that one. I'm just saying. I got no problem with you being, I think no less of any of you who are 70. And don't have hearing aids, yes. See, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Well, I also had a chest cold last Sunday. But I thought I was getting better. I thought I'm on the, and I said I'm on the backside of it, and then Don didn't know what that meant. And so I tried to explain that means that I'm on the other half. I'm getting better. Turned out that wasn't true. But that was last Sunday. Now, that last Sunday already had some emotional weight for it because I had gotten a text message that Clay was in the hospital. This was the Wednesday before last Sunday. It was 10 o'clock at night. I got a text message. He's on his way to Children's Hospital. So I went to Children's Hospital. And the next morning I went to Children's Hospital. When you go into Children's Hospital, one of the things they say is, are you sick? Or do you think you might be getting sick? Or have you just been sick? Wednesday night when I went in, it was like, no problem. No, I'm fine. Thursday morning when I went in, I had to think about it for just a minute. You know, when you sort of know that something's coming on, but you don't really want to believe it. So I was like, no, I'm good. And I went in. Sorry, Clay. Leaving Children's Hospital, on my way home on Thursday, I could tell, I think I'm getting something. And by the afternoon, when I would have gone back to see him and they were going to do another procedure, I knew I couldn't honestly tell the clerk that I didn't have any sort of illness, which frustrated me to no end. Because one of the things pastors do is they go when people aren't doing well. They go to hospitals and they go to homes. They do things. And not only just do I want to do my job well, but I was so frustrated in my heart. So I said, Lord, I'm going to go anyhow. And I don't know if he said this or just my conscience said it, but I was pretty sure if I went, he wouldn't go. And there's no point for me to go if the Lord doesn't go with me. But I really struggled with that. Because for the next couple of days, he was having procedures and the family was having struggles and I couldn't go. And I was really frustrated with the Lord because Clay's there, got problems with his liver. His family's there loving him and scared for him, and I can't go. And I honestly didn't get it. It seemed like, Jesus raised the dead. I thought he could probably take on a cold virus. So I was frustrated with the Lord about that. I got a phone call this next day that said that Tracy Elder was in the hospital in critical condition, had a heart attack. And I couldn't go. So now I'm really kind of put out with the Lord. Because I got two people and their extended families, and I've got phone calls coming. Tracy passed away. If you don't know, Tracy passed away. And I was not, and this isn't about me in terms of her, but it was in terms of me. I was never able to go. And I was never able to make it back to the hospital. And brother, it's a good thing you came back or I'd be coming after you. Pastors go. Not out of obligation, their heart wants to. Tracy passed away, and I was not unable to go also. I was just frustrated with the weakness of my own self, I guess. So what I was then thought, okay, I'm going to get out of town. Our family had about every two or three Thanksgivings, we'd go out of town. And we were scheduled to go to this place, cabins on the beach down in Oregon. So we loaded up to go to the ocean. Myself and Judy and Andrew and Zach and Zach's girlfriend and my brother and his fiance were all going to go. And when I was getting loading up, I was like, Lord, at least this cold's passing. My chest cold. Turns out I was wrong. It was actually getting worse. So for the whole time that I'm down at the ocean, I have this chest cold and I'm coughing and I won't go into, what all that's involved with that, but it's keeping me up at night. My brother, I got kicked out of my family's sleeping room because I was coughing, and when I'm sick, I snore. I don't ever snore when I'm not sick. But when I get a cold, I snore just a bit. So I got booted to the living room by my family, which is the whole reason we were sleeping in the same room together is because we miscounted bedrooms. It's actually pretty simple to get to three, but we just added wrong. Or we didn't count genders or something. But anyhow, so we're all in the same room together until I get sick, and then I got booted out down to the living room. And then so I'm coughing, and my brother, kindly, at 2 a.m., comes out to give me some sort of cold pill. I nearly died because I didn't have any idea anyone was awake, and he appears out of nowhere. Oh, hey, I've got, and he doesn't talk quietly or knock or anything. He's, because he's frustrated because I'm keeping him awake. Scares me to death almost. I came back. But so while I'm there, I get a text from the pastor that we met in Mexico. Pastor Noah is his name. And I get a text from him now and then, and I can tell he's in a difficult spot, and his wife is sick and needs some medicine, and their economy down there is a disaster. And all I can do, because I'm in the middle of nowhere that barely gets texts on occasion, is say, I can't help you, brother. I can pay, or I can pray, but I can't help you right now. So I have another guy who depends on me and my thinking that I can't help. And then I get another text from Sue Hughes that tells me that Kevin had a stroke. He's okay, if you didn't know. But so I'm up to four in a week of people that I am supposed to help take care of that I can't help take care of because I'm either gone or sick or any number of things. So here I am at the ocean. This first night, the night comes. That's the best I could do for night. And my oldest son's girlfriend, this isn't them, she couldn't come with us. She had to take a plane to Denver. Not that one. That one. She lives in Denver, so she had to go to Denver. Early in the morning, the next day after we got to the ocean, and so I had told her, I said, hey, come down and stay at our house, and then you can just take an Uber instead of driving. She lives way up in North Seattle, which was a great plan. We have a hide-a-key outside underneath a rock, and so we told her where the key is, and because we're clever, we put the key under the rock, and all she would have to do is go lift the rock, and if she lifted the rock, there would be the key. But it wasn't there. And it's 11 o'clock at night or so, and she's driven all the way from North Seattle to our house on the promise that she would be able to get a key and go inside. And my son's obviously frustrated because it's his girlfriend, and ultimately it would cost him more than me. But the key that's always there, isn't there. But because I'm a superhero, I have another key in a shed. Now, nobody come looking around my backyard for my keys. I'll just tell you where they are. But I have another key, the emergency backup key, in a shed. It's a creepy shed. That's part of the defense mechanism because I never dust it out. There's spiders everywhere. And so, but I tell her, there's a key. And she says, yeah, right. I'm not going into that shed looking for that key. So I've got an out. My friend Ryan Gritter lives down around the corner. See? Love Ryan Gritter. Call Ryan, and he's there. Hey, Ryan, can you go up and help her find the key? And he says, sure. And so he comes, and he gets in the shed. Next thing I get is a text. Where? Because there's no key in that shed either. So my son's girlfriend, who's driven all the way from North Seattle, is now there with my friend Ryan in the dark in my backyard wondering what kind of idiot says he has two hide-a-keys and has no hide-a-keys. And she has to drive all the way back to Seattle and then come to the airport at 4 a.m. the next day. So there we are at the ocean. It's a good week. Now, don't get me wrong. I had a good vacation. And if you're still starting to think, wow, this is all about Dave, when's God coming in? He'll be here in a minute. So we're at the beach. We went here 3 years ago, and it was beautiful. This time, not so much. Now, this is a fake picture because I didn't take any pictures because it was pouring down rain, sideways rain coming down. We still went for a walk in the rain on occasion, but it's one of the things we like to do is walk in the rain, but it was, walk on the beach, not in the rain. And then the roof started to leak in our cabin. That's what we said. So I went to the property manager, when a leak started to come down, and there's a little sunroom with a skylight, and the leak starts, and it's like, hey, Dave, roof's leaking. So, okay, so I go talk to the property manager. The property manager looks at me, no, just kidding. He says, what do you want me to do? And I came up with a lot of suggestions, but I didn't say any of them, because at that point, I really didn't know what I wanted him to do. He got me a little plastic bucket to stick under the leak, and we did, and called it good. So the next day, we decide we're going to go to town because they have this. Newport has this old town place. It's pretty cool. If you've ever been to Newport, there's New Newport, which seems kind of old, and then there's Old Newport that's older. And so we like to go there. And it's a nice place. It's got Moe's. It's apparently world famous. I'd never heard of it until I went there. But it's a nice little town. We went to get some lunch at the slowest restaurant on earth. We were that restaurant. It's a small restaurant. It's about the size of my office. There were four or five people there that were all there before we got there, and we sat down. It was a half an hour before they took our order, and it was about another 40 minutes before we saw any food, and that was one person got food, and then the other six of us watched them eat. And at the end of it, I still tipped 15%, which my waiter son chewed me out for not tipping more. He loves waiters, and his word, what did he say? If you're ever going to tip less than 20%, tell me and I'll leave the rest. I was thinking I was actually shouldn't have paid the check, let alone the tip, but that's in my own thinking. I thought I was being a nice guy. So we ended up going to see the sea lions. If you've never been to Newport, you should go to Newport. There's these docks that float, and there's sea lions all over them, and they yell at each other when they're trying to get up and off and around and down. And so we had a good time doing that. This was the high point. Seals yelling at each other. So we left there, and there was this little store that sells glass. Judy likes to blow glass. She's done that as a hobby off and on. She does a good job with it, and we wanted to go see what they were selling. So we went to the glass-blowing store, and the amazing thing is that I love to look at blowing glass, but what I like more than blowing glass is candy, and they had candy bowls there. There's this huge bowl of clearly leftover Halloween candy, and the guy said, take all you want. To which I said, okay. And so I actually only wanted, there was a couple of sugar daddies, which are hard caramel things on a sucker stick. I like caramel. Now, I don't really like caramel, so don't think, oh, let's go buy Dave a bag of caramel. If you want to know what I really like, I'll tell you later. But I still do like these. So I got one, and I went back to the van with my family, and I get in the van, I'm taking the wrapper off, and I told my son, man, last time I had one of these was in Mexico a year ago. When I was eating that one, it pulled one of my crowns off. And he goes, really, you probably shouldn't eat one, while I pulled a crown out of the other side of my mouth. I didn't remember I had one on this side. So there it is, if you want proof. I'm still missing that crown. It's in a prescription bottle back at my house. I thought, if I just didn't eat it on this side. My wife says, fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, shame. And she was absolutely right. It irritated me at the moment, but it was truthful. Like, why would I ever eat another one of these things? I have one more on my mantle at home if anybody would like it, because I'm never touching one of these again. So these little crowns, turns out, that's what they look like, and they go on these little posts, and sugar daddies is the actual medical way to remove them. I thought it would take pliers, not a sugar daddy. So this is actually what I said as I pulled my crown out of my mouth. I said to Andrew, you've got to be kidding me. He just looked at me like I was the dumbest person that's ever lived. So I took my little crown and I stuck it in my pocket. So we loaded up to go home. I'm driving home. And I've had this chest cold the whole time. And it's starting to move into my sinuses, I think, because my eyeballs are starting to hurt. But what it actually turns out is, right there, I have an infection in my eye on the drive home. Yeah, that's what I said. Actually, I said something else. But after everything else that had happened on this week, I'm driving home, and I'm like, man, my eye is really bugging me. And I flip the little visor thing down with a nice fancy light. It's like, whoa, there's a blister on my eyeball, which I didn't know could happen, but there it was. And so I go to the urgent care place, when I get home, when I'm supposed to be working on my sermon, and I go to the urgent care place, there's four people in line in front of me. She says, it'll be a while. I said, that's okay. A while was a misstatement, but it took a while. I go in, I see the guy, and he goes, huh, you've got a blister on your eye. I said, I had a $30 copay. I actually said that. He goes, oh, yeah, well, I don't think it's pink eye. It's probably related to your cold. I didn't say again I had a $30 copay, but I wanted something better than probably. But he gave me some medicine. When the nurse came in, she said, here, this will help with your pink eye. So I said to the nurse, do I have pink eye? And she said, yes. I said, but the doctor said I don't. She said, oh, then no. So I said, is that medicine going to help with my pink eye, or is it going to help with what's actually wrong with my eye? She said, yes. At that point, I decided to save my own salvation, I should leave and just get the medicine. So I did. Now, you're probably saying, so you're telling me this why? If you're really sharp, the reason I'm telling you all this is I didn't have time to prepare a sermon, but that's not true. Because all week long, the Lord said, I'm working on it. Because I kept asking, what are we going to do? Is Thanksgiving, should I do something on Thanksgiving? Should I do whatever? And all week long, I felt like the Lord said, we're working on it. And he was, because of this verse. And we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. And why I like this verse and I don't like this verse is it says this, in all things, God works for the good. Why I like that verse is it sounds so good. But why I don't like that verse is it doesn't connect well with my life. Because I don't understand how having a chest cold to keep me from going and seeing people that I love when they're in a difficult spot makes any sense at all. And it doesn't seem good. And it doesn't seem good to have a sugar daddy pull my tooth off in the middle of vacation when I'm just wanting to get away and rest a little bit. And it doesn't seem good to get a text that says somebody that I care about's had a stroke and I should be more bothered that they have a stroke than that I can't go see them, but I'm bothered by both. It doesn't seem good. But the scripture says it is. And what it actually says is we know. We know that all things work together for good. You know what it doesn't say? All things are good. It doesn't say that, and we sometimes put that bumper sticker on with the implication that all things are good. Not all things are good. All things work together for good. Only in one circumstance. For those who love him and are called according to his purpose. And what that means is these bad things that, in my world, bad things, God can take like a person who makes a tapestry and weave them together for good. That's what it says. God works in all things for good. So ultimately, the outcome of all the stuff that happened to me during the week is going to be worked together for good. The fact that my son's girlfriend and my son had a difficult night because there was no key there, that made no cognitive sense to me. I couldn't play out any sort of a scenario where, wow, that's a good thing. And I certainly didn't say that to her on the phone. You know, this is all really good. I didn't say that. And I have absolutely zero idea how that's going to end up good. In the same way that the Bowler family probably, if they're honest, and I won't ask them to stand up and testify, but if they're honest, probably be a challenge to come up with a really good thing other than the glory that there is. But he could have been there. He was there 2 weeks ago. Were you here too? Yeah, you were here 2 weeks ago. How did that cause good? As and of itself, was it good that he had a blockage in his liver? Absolutely not. But God, like somebody who sits down at a harp or picks up a violin and is a master player, is able to somehow, we believe, why? Because we know, and here's what it comes down to, faith. What God's asking of me and of the Bowlers and of you is, do you believe that God meant what he said? Do you believe that God is going to use every single thing for good? It doesn't say most things, all things God can weave together for a good outcome. A liver blockage, a stroke, a massive heart attack that leads to death. A slow waitress, a sugar daddy, and a tooth. Can all of those things, because I don't have enough imagination to figure out how they're going to be good. I want to have enough faith to trust that they will. For me to be able to stop and go, I feel frustrated here, I feel angry here, I feel disappointed here, I feel whatever the feeling is, and go, wait a minute, God absolutely promised that somehow this is going to be good. This is why you need to know all of Scripture, because Hebrews 1 says this, now, 11:1 says, now faith is, so this is what faith is, the assurance of things hoped for. Absolutely assured, positive. The word sure is in there because it's, I am sure of this thing that I hope for. I have the conviction of things not seen. To be convinced of something means there's no question in my mind. I have no question that God, the creator of the entire universe, can weave this together for a good outcome. Now for us, this is our problem. 1 Corinthians 13:12. For now, we see through a glass darkly. I can't see it. I don't know the answer to how. And many times, this is what people want to know when they've been involved in tragedy and large-scale difficulty and sometimes small-scale difficulty. How can this possibly be good? And my answer is, I don't know. But I know a good God who's all-powerful and all-loving at the same time. And see, this is the exact question that gets turned back on God. If he's all-powerful and he's all-loving, why would he let this happen? I don't know. I don't know. I can give you a large systematic theology that explains the fall of man and the curse and all the ramifications for sin in the human condition. I can give you that, but I still don't know why God doesn't step in sometimes and go, nah, I'm going to stop this. But he does sometimes. Don't get me wrong. God's the God of the miraculous. And he doesn't do the miraculous often, when I wish he would. So ultimately, this story about my week and a half, I believe, is presented here for us to ask this question. Do you believe that God will work every single thing for good? Not just most things. Not just the things that are catastrophically big, where we pull that verse out and it gives us some semblance of hope. But even the small stuff, the flat tire. I remember Sandy sharing her flat tire story last week. Do you believe that he will work all things, not that are starting out good, but will end good? All things. And in the midst of that, are you willing to see through a glass darkly? And say, I can't see it, but I believe it. I choose to believe the words of the one who said, I will work this out for good as long as you love me. As long as you love me. It's not a weird price condition. It's that if you love him, you belong to him. And then he's made promises to you. And one of them is that everything will work together for good, even though we can't see it. Amen?
Amen.
Amen.